Each Monday at around 2:30, we invite an expert in. Different expert topic each week, and a chance for you to ask anything you'd like to ask of our guest. Today, we're talking about learning a language. You can text questions in to 2101, like mastering a craft or a musical instrument. Learning a new language takes years of consistent practice, but there are ways to do it more efficiently to accelerate the process. And to help us do that, Paul Nation is an Emeritus Professor of the School of Linguistics and Applied Language Studies at Victoria University. He's developed a number of resources to help people learn languages, which you can find on the Victoria University website. Paul Nation joins me now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Jesse.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks so much for your time today. When did your love of languages begin?
Well, when I think back at it, I think it began in primary school. I come from a really small town, Ohakune, and in the school there were quite a few Chinese students, and they really, because Ohakune was a market gardening area, and I remember them bringing their lunch to school in boxes which had Chinese writing on them. And I got fascinated by this and even started copying some of it. But probably more accidentally, my love of language really came out of my love of teaching people how to learn another language.
There are practical reasons for learning a language we'll get to, but there must be good impractical reasons for learning them as well.
Yes, I know some people who just love learning languages, and they do it for the joy of learning something which is sort of very complicated, but which in many ways becomes quite simple when you get into it. I think people tend to overcomplicate the learning of a language because they see it as involving learning lots of grammar and all of that sort of thing. But in fact, there's not a lot that we can do about the learning of grammar. It's something which the brain really has to take care of, but we have to provide enough opportunities for the brain to get the information to take care of.
You suggest a first step is asking why you're learning the language, what your motivation is, and why is that helpful to know?
Well, I thought it'd make things clearer if I talked a little bit about it, my own experience of learning a particular language. I was going off to Finland to teach for a few months, and I was going to teach at a Swedish-speaking university. So I thought, it'll be really great if I learn a bit of Swedish before I get there. Because Swedish is one of the national languages of Finland, and about 10% of the population speaks Swedish. So I went down to the language laboratory in the university and I said, you got any courses in Swedish? And they said, yeah, sure. And I got the courses and the tapes and I sat down. 4 hours later, I came to a useful sentence. And the sentence was, var ligen toaletten? Where lies the toilet? And I thought, holy smoke, it's taken me 4 hours to get to something which is really useful to know. All the previous stuff was, this is a bus, the bus is red, it is a red bus, and things like that. And I thought, hell, I can do better than this. So a colleague and I decided to do a little research project, and we interviewed about 20 people who had lived in another country, not for a long time, but no more than about 3 months, but certainly more than a month. And we interviewed them, and we did a sort of a double-barreled interview saying, well, what bits of the language did you learn? And then we sort of double-checked that by saying, tell me a typical day when you were living in this country, what sort of things did you talk about, and so on. As a result of that, we came up with a 120-item list of words and phrases which are really useful to learn if you're going to visit another country for a short time. And I decided that I'd try this out. So when I went to Finland, of course, I'd learnt my Swedish survival vocabulary. And on the way home, we were going to go through Greece. So I got the professor of Greek to help me develop, just to translate the survival vocabulary into Greek. And on the aeroplane between Finland and Greece, I learnt 120-item Greek survival vocabulary. And I never knew any Greek before. And when I landed, I could bargain for a taxi. I could tell the taxi we wanted to go to the hotel. I could go out of the hotel and buy some food for us to eat. And I could be polite and friendly to people along the way. And so I've checked it out in quite a few languages. And now if you look on my website, you'll find there's about 20 languages with the survival vocabulary that you can learn.
And because if I'm going to France for a holiday, or my wife's working over there, and I'm going to spend a month with her, I don't need to begin learning the language as if I'm going to write another great novel in French.
Exactly. And I used to teach a master's level course in teaching and learning vocabulary. That's my main specialty. And one of the assignments for this course was for the students to learn 50 words in another language. And I said, well, you know, you're wisest to start off with choosing one of the survival vocabularies which is available in a language you don't know. But keep a careful record of your learning, you know. Put the words onto cards with the meaning on the other side. You can do it on the cell phone now with a flashcard app. And just simply you learn through using the translations, and then keep a careful record of your learning and then reflect on your learning. And it invariably blew their minds, because they found that simply after making the cards, they already could recall about half of the words that they'd put onto the cards. And then by going through using spaced repetition, that is not studying it all in one go, but doing a bit of serious work on it for 5-10 minutes, and then next day come back and do some more serious work on it, they found in a very short time they knew the words with a high degree of accuracy.
I'm just I've skipped ahead, by the way, to Paul's website on the Victoria University website, and he's got a list of different survival word lists. I'm looking at Italian because that's the country that I always think about when I dream of travelling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, hello, how are you? So how to say all those sort of things that you might expect. Then as you go through, there's the numbers, quite a few numbers. We've got a sort of excuse me, a bit of bartering, talking about a map, can you help me, where is the street, a few words like restaurant, department store, airport, bus station, directions, when, where, today, a few drinks, a bit of food, and you're sorted, Paul.
Thereabouts, yeah. And I'm sure people have some special interests that they'd like to pursue, and then, of course, you can add that to your survival vocabulary. But it really cuts straight to the chase, because I think the first sort of principle you need to think about is, why are you learning the language? And if you're learning it to speak, then you want to start off with something like the survival vocabulary and get on to speaking. But if you're learning the language to read, for example, then you should get stuck into reading. There's a very simple learning principle called the time-on-task learning principle. And it simply says, if you want to learn something, do it a lot. So if you want to learn to read, do a lot of reading. If you want to learn to write, do a lot of writing. There is transference between different language skills and so on, but nothing beats doing what you actually need to learn to do.
Yeah, getting some good stories in on text, Paul, of people who tried to learn languages, and the first phrase someone got taught in Japanese was, fish do not have legs. That's a useful one, for visiting Japan.
That's pretty handy, actually, especially if something appears on your plate and you're not quite sure what it was.
Lindsay's first phrase, they learn it, she doesn't say what language, or he says, I think a thunderbolt fell over there. Yes, not particularly helpful. Now, it's one thing to see them on the page, but presumably you would suggest using these vocab lists in association or collaboration with some sort of actually hearing it, hearing these words as well.
Yeah. On my trip between Finland and Greece, I was lucky enough to be sitting next to probably an unlucky person who was a native speaker of Greek, and I got him to sort of model the pronunciation for me so I could learn the pronunciation. Some languages, the pronunciation is really important to get on top of first, because there are aspects of the pronunciation which are so different from English that you actually have to put quite a lot of effort into it. And these include languages like Mandarin or Cantonese or Thai, where you have tones in the language. And it's, if you're getting serious about learning that language, then you probably need some one-on-one help with how to make tones. And that's quite difficult. But once you can do it, then it's really, really great.
What is a reasonable amount of time to set aside each day to learn a language?
Well, that's a question that the Foreign Service Institute in the United States did some interesting work on. The Foreign Service Institute is a government institution in Arlington, next to Washington, which trains the diplomats and the Peace Corps people in many, many different languages. And they have lots of experience in teaching languages to Americans. And they set up a grouping of languages, a four level grouping, from the easiest language for speakers of English to the most difficult languages for speakers of English. And then on the basis of that, they then said, well, if someone wants to reach the basic minimum proficiency in an easy language, how many weeks of study should they do?
Yeah.
And they were looking somewhere around about 10 or 12 weeks or something like that. But if you want to reach the basic level of proficiency in a difficult language, you probably need about twice that amount of time. And it's interesting then to look and see, well, what are the factors that put these languages in the different categories of difficulty for native speakers of English? And there are things like, how transparent is the writing system? So if you're going to learn Swedish, you can almost read Swedish without learning any Swedish, because the letters are the same as English letters.
Yeah.
And the pronunciation is no big deal. People learning Maori need to learn how to get a correct Maori pronunciation. But, you know, after, say, 20 minutes practice, you could read Maori and sound quite good, even though you didn't understand a word of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to something like Thai, then Thai is difficult because you have a different writing system, but it's a bit easy because it's an alphabetic writing system. But then when you come to learn Chinese, well, it's very difficult indeed, because you have ideographs where you have to learn a new symbol for each word, and each symbol is quite complicated. And so there are things like that. And then, you know, the pronunciation and the grammar. So it really all comes back to the connection between the relationship, closeness to the your first language. Now, a native speaker of English... I've done quite a lot of work on the vocabulary growth of native speakers. And a native speaker of English learns about 1,000 words a year. So this is little kids, you know, 3 years old, learning their language. They're picking up around about 1,000 words a year. And the rough rule of thumb is that if you take someone's age and take away 2, so if you take a 7-year-old minus 2 multiplied by 1,000, that means that kid probably knows about 5,000 words.
Wow.
Okay. And so even a 5-year-old going off to school, they know at least 3,000 words of English. Now you can see how, you know, 3,000 words is a lot of words. And even though you study really hard, if you're a learner of English, it's still going to take you quite a long time to learn those words. So you shouldn't underestimate the amount of work that's needed to learn a language. But on the other hand, if you learn something like the survival vocabulary, and then you have good goals after that, you can actually become quite proficient very quickly.
I'm talking to Paul Nation. A Monday Expert segment today is learning a language. And if you have a question for Paul, I'd love to hear from you on 2101. Just to jump out, sort of big picture a bit, Paul, is it true that learning a language gives you a bit of an insight into the people who speak it that you wouldn't otherwise get if you didn't learn the language?
I think there's truth in that. Certainly some words that you learn, you really have to have quite a understanding of the culture to truly understand what those words mean. But also, if you can speak something of a language, of another language, then you also find it easier to become a part of that culture as well. I sort of reflect, my wife is Thai, and we go and visit our relatives in Thailand each year whenever we possibly can. COVID's made a problem of that, but anyway, we're heading off this year. Mm. But I have to, when I reflect on my life in Thailand, when I go, we go there for a month, is very different from the life of people who go as tourists.
Yeah.
And part of it is because I know a little bit of Thai, but the main part of it is that I'm actually part of Thai culture because I have to live with my Thai relatives and behave in ways yeah. which are suitable and appropriate like that. And so the good thing about learning a language is that it can get you into a culture and you see things that, and sides to it that you would never have noticed before.
Katie says she's about to go live in Norway for a few months. She's been learning Norwegian. Quite a bit of what she's learned is quite useful, like excuse me and I'm sorry. But she says the phrase, I am yours and you are mine, has come up several times. She's wondering why and wondering if she'll end up using it. It'd be a shame not to if you learned it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you think it could be really useful in a very narrow circumstance.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Christine says, have you got any advice for language learners over 55? She's probably heard the idea or possibly the myth that it gets harder as it gets older, as you get older.
Well, I actually think you get more cunning as you get older. So anybody who's in any of my classes, one of the things they have to learn very, very early on is that you respect things which are old. You respect old research. You respect old pedagogical findings, and you also respect old teachers. And so I think, but it's quite a good question, Katie, because in order to make things stick in your memory, you've got to, first of all, focus on what you need to learn. Okay, that seems so obvious, but a lot of people think, for example, if you want to learn to speak the language, you should study the grammar. But really, you don't want to learn the grammar, you want to learn to speak the language. So if you want to learn to speak, then you focus on what you want to learn. But then the two other things which really matter are the quantity of time you spend on the focusing and the quality of attention that you give when you focus on it. Now, quantity can simply be the amount of time that you pay attention to something that you're learning at one point. But quantity can also mean repetition, which means coming back to it again and coming back to it again and coming back to it again. And one of the most powerful learning guidelines that research has supported strongly for almost 120 years is if you want to remember something, do spaced retrieval. And spaced retrieval simply means you look at something, you try and make it stick in your memory, and then you put it away, and then you come back to it at a different time, an hour later or something like that. And then instead of looking, if we're looking at vocabulary or words and phrases, you don't look at the word and phrase and the meaning next to it now, because you've already done that. But you just look at the phrase and you say, now, what was the translation in my first language of that phrase or meaning? And you try and recall it. That's called retrieval. Mm. And it's like sitting a little test. But you can use the same trick when you want to remember people's names. You know, if people put a name tag on, great. But then when you try to really remember their names, you should be trying to do retrieval, not looking at their name tag, but yeah. looking at their face and saying, now, what the hell was their name written on there? Thing like that. And then what I found, too, when I was learning other languages later on, is that there are mnemonic or memory tricks that you can use. And the memory tricks you can use are making associations with the words that you are trying to learn. So if the foreign word you're trying to learn looks a bit like an English word, then you make an image between the meaning of that foreign word and the meaning of the English word. And so, for example, let me think of a, you know, the word for rice in Thai is kao. And then you, and because that sounds like the word cow, then you could say, now let me image a cow eating rice.
Yeah.
And then that mnemonic trick. It's actually a very well-researched trick. It's probably over-researched. There's probably about 60 pieces of research at least on that technique, largely because it's called the keyword technique. And people like Paul Daniels and that in their language courses have sort of adopted this technique as well. Hey, but there are memory tricks that you can use, Katie.
Thank you. Paul, I have to ask, what about the apps? There are all sorts of apps, including some particularly famous ones, saying that they can teach you a language just using your smartphone in 5 minutes a day. Well, have you had a look at them?
I have to admit I haven't looked at many of them. You can learn a language in 5 minutes a day to a certain level of proficiency. And that's why I think, say, for example, the survival vocabulary is good, because the total investment of time for learning that is probably no more than about 2 or 3 or 4 hours at the very most indeed. And by spending a few minutes a day, then you can get that kind of learning. But as I said when I gave the example of native speakers of English, if you truly want to learn a language, then it is something like a lifetime's occupation, because you know the vocabulary size of adult native speakers of English is somewhere around about 15,000-20,000 words, and that's a lot of learning, but it's not something that should put you off learning, because at various stages of learning you can do a lot. With 1,000 or 2,000 words, you can really do a lot of speaking and a lot of listening and be quite successful at it. With just under 9,000 words, you can actually read quite a lot of material in another language and only have about 1 or 2 unknown words occurring in about every 20 or 30 lines of a book. So there's, it's possible with small advances to be able to do a lot.
You were actually keen on rereading the same thing in another language, coming back to it and reading it over and over again. Who's that useful for?
Well, that satisfies that principle of quantity of attention to what you want to learn.
Uh-huh.
So by rereading something, you're getting repetitions of the stuff that you met before, and that repetition is giving you the quantity of attention that you need to do the learning. The only slight issue with it is the quality of attention, because you're simply coming back verbatim and looking at the same thing again. There's a very interesting law which lies behind language, and it's called Zipf's Law, Z-I-P-F, named after a psycholinguist called George Zipf, who lived in wrote books in the 1940s and so on. And Zipf's Law sort of says that if you take the vocabulary of a language and look at the frequency with which each word in that language occurs, you don't end up with a list of words which all have roughly equal frequency. You end up with a list of words where the most frequent word of the language occupies about 7% or so of any text. And then the next most frequent word, the number two word, occupies half of that, so another 3% of text. So simply by learning two words, you could understand 10% of a text. It's not going to help you much, because in English they are words like the and of and so on. But the first 10 words of a language will cover about 25% of any text, and the first 100 will cover about 50 words of a text. And the first 1,000 will cover around about 70% of the words in a text. Now, you see, there's probably about 30, 40,000 words in any language. But if you focus on the right words to learn, you can really make enormous progress very quickly.
And how many languages do you speak, Paul?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think my most fluent language is English. I hope so. But probably my next most fluent language is Indonesian, because I lived there for a total of about 4 years or more. And I don't know. And I can sort of speak Thai after a fashion. At the moment, I'm struggling to learn to read Thai. But I'm doing that through spaced repetition. Every time I'm at the swimming pool waiting for my wife to come out of the changing sheds, I pull out my children's book in Thai and struggle away at the reading. But I'm getting quite good. I did quite well today, actually. So it's probably about three or four. But sometimes, because I've lived in Japan a reasonable amount of time, people think that I'm fluent in Japanese. And I say, yeah, I am fluent in Japanese. I know about 200 words and phrases, but I know them very fluently. And this is a point that I'd like to make with something like the survival vocabulary and at any level of language proficiency. You should make sure that what you know fluently. And that is that you, when you learn something, you don't just learn it to memorize it, but you go over and over so that you can really produce it very quickly.
Got a couple of minutes left. Can you tell us about your 4-3-2 technique?
Oh, yeah. That's a repetition technique for developing fluency. It simply means that you, if you're working in a class with other learners, one of the ways that you can get fluent with the words that you know and the phrases that you know is to do a little activity where you pair up with another learner and you have 4 minutes to talk on a topic that either you choose or the teacher chooses, but which is very easy for you. And you give that description or talk to your partner. And the teacher times this and times it for 4 minutes, and after 4 minutes says, stop, change partners, and you move to a new partner. And then you give exactly the same talk again, but you've only got 3 minutes this time.
Yeah.
But because you've got a new partner, then it's still genuine communication because you're trying to get your message across to that person. It's important the other person doesn't interrupt, but then you give the same talk again. And then, of course, 3 minutes change partners, and you do this same thing for 2 minutes. And by that time, you're starting to get really fluent and up to a reasonable sort of speed with something that you already know, but now you know it really well so that you can use it fluently.
Great. Quick fire question. Should you learn the vocabulary in another language by using the English language word first and then the new word or the other way around?
When you start off, you should learn you should be looking at the foreign word you're learning. And you should be using your first language English word as a translation for that word.
Okay.
So that's called receptive learning. But at
nice
some
one.
Point, you've got to do it the other way around and do productive learning so that you can actually produce the foreign word for speaking and writing. But that comes later.
Okay. And I knew, as an emeritus professor of the School of Linguistics and Applied Language Studies at Victoria University, that you would have an answer for that in Paul Nation. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Can I make just one other comment, Jesse?
We're out of time, Paul, but tell us off air and I'll share it after the news.
Okay.
You may have heard just before 3 p.m, Paul had one final point he wanted to make in our Monday Expert feature on learning a language, and that was that he has created a publication, a free publication that you can download called What Do You Need to Know to Learn a Foreign Language? It's almost 60 pages long and covers everything from working out what your needs are, learning what's most useful to you, balancing your learning through listening and reading, through speaking and writing, getting fluent at using what you know, a lot of the things which we discussed in that interview. So we're going to put a link on our website, but for whatever reason you can't find it, if you Google Paul Nation and go to his site on the Victoria University of Wellington, that is contained as a PDF download in the little section on Paul Nation's publications. I hope you find that useful.